Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Wednesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies and promoting our speaker's book, I Object. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference, brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, so it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social a network, though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I sit really situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions and all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom is Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Everett for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not that your remedy is in the law anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, I thank you so very much for your disclaimer there. We will be joined shortly by Herr Slevin. I also see now, well, here he is. And I also see that Tony the Tiger has joined us. So Tony the Tiger has an open mic, as does Mr. Slevin and myself. So feel free to participate wherever you're comfortable, Tony, with Mr. Slevin. Tonight, we're pretty much going to focus on the LLC process and try to create a very succinct, compressed explanation of it tonight. And as Mr. Slevin has other obligations to attend to, and perhaps after that, if Tony has some comments he'd like to share with you about some skill sets that he has and that will become available to you all shortly, that would be nice as well. So without further ado, let me turn the call over to Herr Slevin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. So the product that our company produces is called a private firm. This comes from the Supreme Court case Flint v. Stone Tracy, where they said a private firm is not subject to the income tax, which is a really good place to be. So how we create the private firm is we first go to the Secretary of State of New Mexico and fill out an Articles of Organization. The Articles of Organization requires a minimum of two parties. They are the organizer and the registered agent, both of which can be other LLCs. And we have in our repertoire several LLCs that act in these capacities. One is one set is headquartered in Alamogordo, New Mexico. The other is headquartered in Raton, New Mexico. So we fill out the personnel from our company fills out the Articles of Organization, and then submits it to the Secretary of State using the name of the new company that we've agreed on with the client. Secretary of State issues a Certificate of Organization that is also known as the birth certificate for the company, as an aside. So once that piece of paper is in hand, one of our other personnel who has not filled out a 1040 U.S. individual income tax return says to the IRS, we need to get an EIN employer identification number, which is a form of tax identification number for this new company, and we want it for banking purposes only. IRS goes, you got it, and issues an EIN on a form letter called a CP575. So that that person on that letter is noted as the sole member, because LLCs are owned by members having percentages of membership. So the sole member has a meeting with himself, forms a resolution, and commissions a manager, which is the only officer of an LLC. And then that manager takes the certificate of organization, the EIN, and his commission, otherwise known as a letter of authority, to a local bank, a brick-and-mortar bank, and gets this new company a checking account. Comes along a debit card and all the electronic bells and whistles that most people expect today in banking. Brings that all back to the office. One of our other personnel pairs it with a pay-as-you-go cell phone. They program it with the electronic banking for the new company. And we also include the Square app and Cash app. Square app is a point-of-sale app so that the new company can take debit cards and credit cards as payment for its products and services. Cash app is a peer-to-peer transfer so you can move money back and forth. Both of these apps also offer a debit card, and when you apply for the debit card, they open another checking account at whatever their bank they're contracted with. And so when all of this is fleshed out, the new company has three separate checking accounts and three separate debit cards and ways of moving money around because, you know, you never go out without a spare tire or a spare parachute. So the company is all formed up. Everything's programmed in. Money's moved around to make sure it all works. We put it in a box and ship it out to the client. Client is then capable of doing business income tax free worldwide in anonymity because the client's name is not on anything. It's just our organization's people. So we can do this. This is our base model, if you will, and of private firm. Then we can add things to it like other checking accounts, savings accounts, equity trading accounts, so forth and so on. Any financial account that a person can have, human can have, these LLCs can have. So these can also be co-joined up in a manufacturing concern that says, you know, the business is owned and operated by one LLC. The building is owned by another one and rented back to the operations LLC. The equipment in the building is owned by a third LLC and rented back to the operations. And then all the people that are working for can be working with their own LLCs contracted with a fourth LLC as a worker distribution operation. And then they work for the main operation of whatever widgets the people are building. Estate transfer is really cool because you can have mom and pop have their estate, house, and boat, whatever. Those can all be titled in the LLC's name. And then the beneficiaries can be commissioned as managers. And so upon the demise or decapacitation of the principal's mom and pop, and then the beneficiaries simply take over the family business. No probate, no estate taxes. And there's other ways of doing things to use. It's a very versatile tool. Sometimes we like to call it a starship because once we build it and hand it off to you, it can go as fast and as far as you want it to. What are your questions?
All righty. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2. And I'll give unmute yourself here. Before we go to David in Texas, we have a first-time caller from Eatonton, Georgia, ending in 2248. I'm just curious how you heard about our call tonight.
I heard about it from a friend.
Wonderful, wonderful. And your first name, please, only first name?
Henny.
Evie?
Penny.
Can you spell that for me, please?
P-E-N-N-Y.
What's the matter, Mike? You don't understand Southern?
Yeah.
No, I didn't even understand the spelling. I'm sorry. I'm ashamed. You said Peavy.
Penny.
Peavy.
Penny.
Penny, like the coin? Penny,
yeah.
Like the coin?
Yeah. Yes, like the coin.
Got it. Thank you, Miss Penny. I appreciate
you.
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
So,
all right. Thank.
She,
welcome,
she's
welcome
obviously
in,
a George Page.
There you go. All righty. David in Austin, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Michael. I've got, I think, three questions. Number one, I've done quite a bit of work with Michael and Bernie on the corporate soul and charitable religious trusts for me and multiple family members and associates of mine. And we're very comfortable with that because of the extensive amount of information that is provided on their website, up to and including reciting the book chapter and verse from the code and the Constitution and the Montana Constitution for the corpse soul, on and on and on, to validate the tax exempt status of those two entities. Is there a website or further information that we can be led to and read about the tax immune status of your tax immune LLC? And what parts of the code define it, clarify it, et cetera?
Yeah. I am working on building such a creature. Let's see. It was Bernie was with me for almost a full year before I was able to launch and complete his website that I've been working on for a year. So that's something that's in the makings, in the process. When I have something that I verify to be solid, I want to get it out as quickly as possible, rather than delay when it could be out there helping people. So it's in the works.
Okay. Do you have an ETA on that?
I wasn't in a rush, so I was kind of following the same schedule I had with Bernie's. So
okay. Second question.
But if there's anything that you need regarding putting your finger like what Bernie does for you, just put that into an extensive email. I'll get it in front of Mr. Slevin, and he'll be happy to answer point book, chapter, and verse.
Okay. One of the questions. I believe I understand that the CP 575 extension for your tax immune LLC is a G. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And having done dozens and dozens and dozens of the tax exempt CRTs and corporate souls to get a extension of E, what is it? Which box do you check to get a G?
Well, when it says on the IRS form to get an EIN, it asks five questions saying, why is the LLC getting this EIN? And we always select the one that says banking purposes. That actually used to say banking purposes only up until 2017. And then it says something to the effect on the subheading. Select this one if you are trying to strictly apply to local law and banking regulations or something like that, which obviously there's no mention of taxation in there. Because the main chapter or main chapter and verse that we deal with is section 701 of the Internal Revenue Code, which says a partnership as such shall not be subject to the income tax imposed in this chapter, period. That happens to be chapter one. And the so the term partnership is also defined in part. It says that the term partnership shall include an unincorporated organization, which is a definition of a limited liability company. So that's how we tie all that together. And that's the short basis of everything we do. Because if something is not involved in the income tax or whatever, then there's no any of the requirements such as reporting or filing or whatever, you just don't have to do because you're not part of that situation. And that's the explicit difference between immune and exempt. Exempt means you meet the criteria for the tax or whatever, but we, in our largesse, the legislators go, we're not going to penalize you for it. We are going to exempt you from the penalization. But immune means you're not there. You're not subject to, not liable for. You're free. Go ahead.
Well, I've got six Wyoming LLCs that I have gotten EIN numbers for. Mm-hmm. And I have set them all up with the banking as the reason for establishing it. And mm-hmm. every single one of them came back with a an extension of B as in boy, not a G.
Okay. And here again, I really didn't even pay attention to that. I've been doing this for roughly 20 years. I didn't really pay that attention to that extension until somebody on this organization brought it up. And I went, oh, okay, there is a difference. So we've got this much time in this venue doing business under that thing. Personally, I don't think the IRS gives a hoot. You know, it's an EIN, and it's for banking purposes only. They don't have any jurisdiction over these LLCs, and they know it. So go ahead.
Well, my six LLCs from Wyoming that I did for banking purposes only that have the extension B state on there specifically that a tax return is required to be filed every year, I think by April 15th. So when you get a G extension, I've looked on the internet and I've seen several G extensions that don't require a form or a date. So I'm still, it's a mystery to me. How do you get a G?
We just fill it out and select that and answer no to all the rest of the questions. I don't know the difference because apparently, as far as I can tell, we've never gotten anything other than a G. And we've been doing this back since where you had to fill out the paper forms and mail them in or fax them in. So, and as I said, you know, that doesn't seem to matter. And if the EIN form says you have to fill out something or so forth, well, if you're standing on 701, section 701, and you're not subject to, then you don't care. Because you're not subject to it. So they can pontificate all they want, but it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
And I'll tell you, I agree with you on that, but I'm just trying to figure out how the hell to get a G. And
okay.
We can
have a conversation on that in private and figure that out.
And we'll see if we can work that out. And I appreciate your input. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You bet.
All righty. Thank you, David. All right, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2. Jennifer. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. Sorry I'm driving. I don't know if this is noisy or not. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
So I was wanting to do the... you know, like getting the loan, line of credit from the bank. Do I have to
Lily, we've hit some snags with some of our contracted parties in doing that, and so this just happened like Thursday. So we're having to make sure what we can do with that, and that's what's causing the delay, and that's going to be at least another week before we can properly implement those kind of things. So you're, yes, ma'am, you are on the list, but we just have 17 million things going on at one time here. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, my question was, do I need to have the LLC that you provide to get the line of credit?
The short answer is you'll need to have an aged LLC. We have some of those on the shelf, but here again, and we have sources of other aged LLCs because the LLC has to be aged at least 2 years. So,
okay.
It's just all in the mix at this point. So, we will be calling and setting up a time to talk this privately and all this good stuff, but it's just not right now.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Jennifer. Next is Big Ed. Go ahead, Big Ed.
Are we clear on this signal here?
Yes.
We are. Wall to wall.
Yeah, the individual was asking about that additional letter on the end instead of the letter B, Bravo, and E, exempt.
Yes.
Was you able to answer that vaguely by Barney getting a fourth line on an address like Mexico, and that's where that came from?
That's Bernie's take on it. We've also, you know, but I haven't had that experience. And as I said, this just came up within the last month or two that it all. So that's still under research. I just know that we've been doing business like this for nearly 20 years, and it's never been a bother. So
yeah. The E's the good one, like you're saying. I'm done. I'm stepping back.
Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, Big Ed. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to let Mr. Slevin get on with his other business that he has to do tonight, and perhaps Tony the Tiger could grace us with his presence and share with us some different things that he skill sets that he has in addition to what he's already shared with us. Press star 2 on your keypad for Mr. Slevin. Going once. Going twice. Hey, we got Big Ed back again. Go ahead, sir. Nope, he went back off again. Okay. Must have just had a little twist.
Fat finger.
All right. yeah, Mr. Slevin, thank you for getting with us tonight. Have a safe trip back home when you're done with your business there in California, and we'll talk soon.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, Tony.
Hey, everybody. Can you hear me?
Hear you just fine, sir. Just fine. I was very pleased to see you on the call tonight. You had joined us with your friend last week, and that, I got to tell you, I can't think of the last call that I've hosted where I had that much feedback from the general population on the call. It was really quite a good call. I was thinking of asking the anchor man if he'd be interested in coming back possibly monthly or, you know, if possible, every other week or so. Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet.
So it looks like he did just respond to me, so maybe I just sent him a text to see if he had the ability to join this evening. And I just wanted to say thank you for, you know, allowing us to be able to come on and be able to be an information provider. So with Mr. Slevin and the product that he provides, I've been able to get a private firm set up through him. And one of the things that he was able to set up, I already had an aged shelf corporation. And one of the things that our counterpart, Ron Burgundy, he's able to do is add aged trade lines to your EIN, and basically has the ability to go into your EIN on your shelf corporation and be able to add an aged trade line to your EIN onto the business. And the way he's able to do it, it actually looks as if it was a trade line that you've had for the past 3-4 years, and you've been paying down the balances, you know, very similar to a car loan or a personal loan or even kind of like a credit card. And so one of the services that I provide is also the credit repair onto the front of that. And so I figured, you know, having us three have the ability to work in conjunction, I think can you know, set up really nicely for people to be able to get personal funding, business funding for their businesses. So one of the, again, one of the things that Mr. Slevins is able to provide with the private firm, and then Ron Burgundy being able to apply the aged trade lines to your business, and then if people have, you know, personal credit issues that maybe they need to get enhanced or cleaned up to look better for them to be able to apply for those, they'll definitely be able to help their ability to get, you know, better funding and
sure,
with no questions asked as they come into, you know, the bank and or applying for those items.
Well, credit repair is a an incredibly important standalone skill set unto itself. And so perhaps you could share with us how let's just say that you have a new student today to execute a credit repair. Walk us through that. So today, let's just call this May 1st so that we can stay, you know, not try to keep juggling numbers. On May 1st, you have a new student. And I would imagine that that you've pulled a credit report or they've pulled a credit report from three different agencies and have shared that with you. So what happens and how long does it take and where does it go from there?
So as far as, like, the credit report, I'm able to pull their credit report and be able to analyze where they may be deficient, where they may have some issues on their credit report, and where we have the ability to improve their credit report. And so 9 times out of 10, we're going to try to clean up the personal information to clean up and remove all the personal information, just because the way that the data furnishers like to, they try to gather all of your information and have all your private personal information about you in their databases. And we don't want that information out in the public for anybody to see. And so we will go in and we will wipe all the personal information, and we can adjust it to where some of the things that I had to do to clean up credit repair is I would use maybe a P.O. box. For example, if I had a credit item that I needed to get removed off my credit report, but it was attached to my credit report because of that address, we would add a new address, a P.O. box. We would be able to wipe all that old personal information off, and then that would allow us to attack and remove all of these items that we can dispute on your credit report. So whether it's a late payment, we can dispute late payments, inquiries, charge-offs, bankruptcy, student loans, and basically, depending on how bad the profile is, we have the ability to do a complete credit wipe with a more aggressive approach within 30 days. So from day one to day 30, we could have, you know, depending on how the credit profile looks like, if they have a pretty healthy profile, meaning they had a couple revolving lines of credit, a couple credit cards, a couple auto loans, things like that. Normally, like, a healthy profile has about five plus accounts on their credit report. And as long as we stay above that, we could have you at an 800 credit score within 30 days.
Wow.
And if it's a little bit light, you know, it's not as pressing, you know, we can, it typically takes anywhere from, within 30 days, we'll see results no matter what. But if we go maybe more of a traditional approach, we can we'll see things falling off each month, each and every month with the results.
Well, that's phenomenal. So how many additional months, how many additional months after the first month to have it where it should be?
I would say three to four months, 4 months max. 3 months
okay.
is typically we would have everything, because first month we're going to need to get everything prepared and prepped to pull everything off, and we'll be pulling things off during that time anyways in that first month. But after we prep all the personal information, we'd be pulling off like a handful of it if there was any inquiries, and then, again, some of the bigger items, charge-offs, mortgages, student loans, items like that. And we also have the ability to try to add some revolving lines to also help boost their credit as well.
Okay. So can you follow some of the same procedures that the Anchorman has for aged LLCs and apply those same similar procedures to an individual's account?
Yep. So with Ron Burgundy, he his approach is first things first is he always likes to make sure that your personal credit is on par. So that's got to be first step to start. And the reason why is because nine times out of ten, when you go into a bank or are requesting for, you know, a vehicle, things like that, nine times out of ten, they're going to want a personal guarantee. And so you would want your personal credit to be cleaned up. And then we have the ability to get a hold of these shelf corporations through Mr. Slevin's. And I also have the ability to get a hold of these as well. And Ron would be the person to be able to attach these backdated trade lines to show strengths onto your EIN business profile. So, for example, when you first get a – if you were to get a business and you don't have any previous credit history, it would be like an 18-year-old walking into a bank and trying to apply for a credit card. And they're – it's not going to look very appealing to them. They're going to see that you don't have any credit history or past performance, and so they're going to probably start you out with, you know, a small credit card and or make you try to get a secured credit card. And so with what Ron does, he is able to add these trade lines onto your EIN. So now it looks as if you've gone into the bank previously and have had previous loans with them, showing that you've built this trust with them and that you've had good payment history and have the ability to pay down a pretty substantial loan. I think one of the two business packages that I bought were $150,000 worth of line of credit for the Small Business Financial Exchange, and then the second line of credit is a $50,000 line of credit through the Small Business Experian, and this has allowed me to be able to get three $20,000 credit cards for one of my business, and two $75,000 credit cards with my second business. It's allowed me to be able to I'll be purchasing a new vehicle this month through one of the businesses, and I shouldn't have to use any personal guarantor for that, and that will be a $100,000 truck. And just from talking with Ron Burgundy and working with him, I know tons of his students have gotten – I have the text messages right in front of me where, you know, they were showing the students of having success of getting two $75,000 credit cards, and then there was someone else who received two $85,000 credit cards. Another one was a $93,000 credit card and another $50,000. And so, and most of these people are also being able to go get a vehicle. There was a gentleman who was able to go get a brand new tractor for his business. And again, also would be able to assist in being able to purchase a home as well.
Now, last week, I want to recap something here. Last week, I had asked Ron directly. I said, is there anything illegal about what you're doing? Because, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't sound right. And his response was, and I had to smile because I'd heard this response actually from a couple of attorneys several decades ago. And the response was that Ron gave was that this particular area is not regulated. So therefore, there's no right or wrong to it. It's just not an illegal thing to do. So you can do it. And the attorneys that I had talked to a couple decades ago said, it's not about the moral issue. There's nothing moral about the law, meaning civil law, and that it is either something that is legal or it is illegal. And if it's not illegal, you can do it. So, that struck home with me. And on one hand, it may sound morally apprehensible, but on the other hand, it's the law. You can do it. No different than if you want to murder your baby in some states. You can do it, even after they're born. It's not moral. It's just what the law says.
And also in reference to more and more that I've been learning through the credit consumer reports and the credit consumer laws is that we are the holder in due course. And so with them having our personal information, that is considered, identity theft to an extent. And so anything that is in the public for other people to see, we have the ability to dispute anything and everything on our credit report.
Since Ron can enhance a EIN, are you able to enhance a SSN?
So there's a couple things that I am working on at this time. There are a handful of ways to enhance the Social Security number by adding revolving trade lines, similar to like rent reporters and Rental Karma. Or you can basically add your rental history. You have the ability to add your utility bills, your phone bill, things like that. People don't think of to normally add that to their credit reports, but those are all bills. We're all paying those, and I'm sure none of us has probably ever even skipped a bill once, in probably the past 10 years, but those things all are reported as a revolving line of credit. And we're paying on those monthly, and nobody utilizes those as being able to boost your credit. And you can sometimes see a 60-point jump, and over the course of the next few months, over the next year, you will continually, gradually gain a couple points each month from making your payments as you normally do. You make your monthly mortgage payment. That is typically on your credit report, but as far as like your gas, electric, utility bills, we can add those to boost. And there are a few other things that I'm also trying to get my hands on that will potentially have the ability to add primary to our personal as well in the future.
Good. That's excellent. So let's open this up for a Q&A here. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to speak with Tony here regarding personal credit and dealing with the credit bureaus. Press star 2. Miss Jennifer, welcome back. Go ahead.
Well, you know my situation with Chase Bank. I'm just wondering, could Tony's method finish it off?
All right. Why don't we have a conversation tomorrow, sometime in the afternoon, so that you can share your private information with Tony, and let's see where that takes us.
Okay.
Is that reasonable? I don't want to broadcast this on the open call.
All right. No problem. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Anything else, Jennifer?
Probably a lot, but not right at this minute. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. Let me check Freedom's Radio, see if anybody has raised their hand there while you're thinking about raising your hand. Anybody else, press star 2 on your keypad. All right. All right, well, thank you for the... did I not... Jennifer, did you raise your hand again? Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I live in a home that's owned by the Charitable Religious Trust, and that account pays for the electricity and trash and all that sort of stuff. And I always didn't want a huge credit score because people don't want to or can't really steal your identity if you don't have if you can't get credit because you don't have a good credit score. And so that's sort of why I have purposefully tried to keep mine low rather than high. But would I need to, not have the trust pay for these things, even though the house is owned by the trust, Charitable Religious Trust.
Tony?
I apologize. Would you be able to, repeat the question? I apologize. I didn't get to catch it all.
Oh, we can talk about it tomorrow. It's okay. Don't worry.
So is it in reference to boosting your credit profile? So you mentioned that you kind of didn't really necessarily pay it any mind and you kept it on the low end. And so are you, asking maybe ways of being able to boost up and add to the profile, your...
Well, because a Charitable Religious Trust owns the house and the land, and so it pays for all the bills. And so would I have to change that, basically?
And so, and all the bills are in the trust name?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. They're in my name, in the trust account.
Okay, so I would say as long as they're in your name, that we would probably be able to get that attached to the profile. We do have letters where we have the ability to send it to the bureau and or the creditor to make sure that they are reporting those. While you're paying them, they should be reporting them to be boosting your credit.
I just feel like it's a a bit scary having a high credit score. I've never really needed one, so I've always kept it low. So, you know, no one was going to go after my identity type of thing.
Understood.
So anyway,
all right.
Do you have to apply?
I think, I guess ultimately it will come down to maybe some of the things that you're interested in trying to get out of it. Me personally, now that I kind of had my profile built, I don't utilize my personal side anymore. I just utilize everything from the business side. And so on the personal side, I'm sitting in the low 800 score, and so which is the best score you can have is anything a 781 and above. And so you basically, I just built mine to there, and I just let it maintain itself. And there's not anything that I really do to try to maintain it at this time, and there's nothing that can really be that can happen to it derogatory right now, other than when I apply for credit cards through the business, it will ding my personal social security number, but then I will go have them remove the inquiry off of my credit report.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for the information.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, sometime tomorrow afternoon, Tony, when my afternoon, when you are up and running, give me a call and remind me to connect you to Jennifer Sue. Would you do that?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Make a note of that. All right. Before we go to Kent, who will be our last call tonight, I want to share something that came in from Freedoms Radio. It says, let me get this straight. Your guest speaker is basically saying that you can report false information to improve your credit rating. You're calling it enhancement, but isn't that false information? This smells massively bad to me. What's your response?
So in reference to Ron Burgundy's being able to enhance the credit profiles, I guess I probably don't have – I know Ron has had a response for that, but I think that probably goes with saying that what you mentioned earlier is in this particular field, it's not regulated. And so I know people will take advantage of loopholes. You know, I know a lot of people, mm-hmm. you know, criticize, you know, people like Donald Trump and things like that for, you know, a lot of the businesses that they've taken advantage of, and then they would then go bankrupt, with those businesses. And so, I just look at
allows.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what the law allows. And so I wouldn't necessarily say it's necessarily a negative. I would just say that it's something that isn't regulated. It's not something that you can necessarily get in trouble for. But it is something, you know, a lot of things, it is something a lot of people do. So.
Yeah. All right. I can also add to that, and this goes back for me personally, like 30 years ago. I was regular to my bank with it was almost like a partnership, if you would, without it being a partnership, where I had seasonal money coming in. I'm a jeweler by trade, so any mistakes that I made during the year. We're all are remedied during and immediately after the Christmas holidays. because of the nature of my business. But I had promises that were made to me that if I did this and met these numbers and had this P&L percentage in line, et cetera, and it was almost like corporate America when I worked for Zales, that they would do something else with regards to my interest rates and their lending posture that they had. And after I had met all of these criteria, and I walked into the bank in January 10th or whatever it was, and I wrote them a check for what we had agreed upon and so forth, and I handed it to them. They thanked it, you know, applied it and so forth, and I said, now I'd like for you to do your part, what we talked about. And the banker kind of weaseled in his chair and kind of got this look on his face, and he felt uncomfortable. I could tell he was comfortable. He goes, yeah, about that. Our lending posture has changed. Those were his words. Our lending posture had changed. Now, had I known that going in, that they weren't going to honor their words, I would have applied the funding differently. I wasn't compelled to do what they wanted to see me do. But that was the bar that they set in order for this next phase of what I wanted to do, which was actually build a standalone store and move out of a strip center that I was in and had been in for 10 years. And they just dashed they took the money, knowing full well that they were not going to honor the verbal agreements that we had worked upon. Because, you know, I've always been, if I can't, you know, if you can't shake my hand, and or if we can't shake because we're miles apart, if I can't take your word, you know, what good are you as far as I'm concerned? But, you know, everything with others, people, sometimes is just what's written down in contract form. And then even then, they can renege on what they want. And if you don't like it, well, sue me. You know, that's how some people are. Anyways, so I learned from the attorneys. My former roommate was an attorney that had actually worked with him in helping him graduate from law school, doing moot court, because debate was where my strength was as far as that application to his work. And the attorney says, look, the law is the law. It's not right. It's not wrong. Depends who you talk to as to what they consider right or wrong. Of course, I go to the scriptures, what's right or wrong. And he says, no, the law is the law. If you can do something within the law and it helps you and it makes your money, do it. Anyways, so with that having been said, let's talk to Kent.
Good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I had a couple questions, but I first want to comment on what this other party was asking about this being questionable or shady or unethical that Mike was just reading. I think that this could be compared, for example, to a mortgage foreclosure. I mean, there are people that would say, well, you know, you really borrowed the money and they really loaned it to you, so therefore you should pay it. And if you do anything other than that, then you're doing something that's dishonest. But, you know, all the facts were clearly not disclosed ahead of time, and it's very questionable what they loaned you. So now I'm not saying that because they did something dishonest, you should do something dishonest, but I think that all needs to be taken into account when you raise the question of whether or not something is ethical. You have to look at the whole picture. So I just think that that's a good analogy and a good answer, because I can see somebody hearing about this program and saying, well, you know, these people are talking about reestablishing the republic and proper government, and within that is ethics and honesty. But I think this is an ideal analogy for this type of situation and the type of question that was raised. I'd like your feedback on that, and then I'll go on with my other couple of questions.
I have no feedback on it. I heard what you said, and you're absolutely correct about the theft, the dishonesty on the banker's part, basically in every and all transactions. I mean, they create money out of thin air, secure your home with a mortgage, and then if you don't pay back with your equity, with your labor, your sweat, if you get sick or whatever and you can't, they'll take your house. How is that possible to take a tangible asset when they created their asset out of thin air? No, it's not equitable. It's not fair. And then, you know, of course, they, as many foreclosures as I've audited between student and teachers over the years, these mortgage brokers, they lie. So gross. It's horrible. But, again, the point that you made is that, you know, because one person lies doesn't make it right for the other person to lie. I guess that's something that just everybody has to decide on their own. For instance, parents may be dead set against abortion, but when their 14-year-old daughter was raped and became pregnant, and then, you know, add to that any boogeyman class of people by race or nationality or whatever, religion, to the mix, you know, all of a sudden they become justifiable to abortion, some of them. So it's just everybody's got to figure out what they want to do. We're just letting you know that this is available. And cleaning up your credit report, there are rules. I know this from dealing with the programs that we've had in the past that we still offer. For instance, just to let you know, we have a $600 program. It's two booklets. It's how to deal with a debt collector trying to collect funds, and it's also dealing with the credit bureaus that the debt collector is reporting to. You know, we have this book on that, and it's very, very specific on what the credit bureaus may do. They don't do it, and when you catch them at it, you can get the credit bureau score pumped up real quick for a couple, 3 months. Not a problem. Anything else, Kent?
Yeah, before I ask my question, do you want to add anything to that, Tony, and then I'll ask you my questions.
Yeah, I think so. The nice thing is with the Fair Credit Reporting Act and the consumer law.
The Telephone Protection Act.
Yep. There's just so many laws that really protect us. And, again, with us being the holder in due course, this is our personal information. These banks would not be around without us. These institutions who are, you know, they're biting at the bit for us to be able to take out loans. So they have the ability to borrow against us. And so, you know, we are a benefit to them. And the problem is they take advantage of us by gathering our information, selling our information, and, you know, postering all of our information all over. You know, people don't realize how many data furnishing companies that are out there. There's thousands of them. And, you know, when people get their hands on that, they have the ability to do identity theft on you. And so we as individuals have the ability to dispute anything on our report. And actually to the point of removing everything, regardless if it's our account, you know, we still have the ability and the rights through consumer law to have these items removed if we don't want them on our credit report. So that's one thing that's afforded to us by the consumer laws. So.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, my two questions are as follows. Number one, by doing what you do and what you explained that you do along with what Ron does, do you actually generate more inquiries onto the report, which you then have to go back and remove?
Nope. You will not have any. There isn't anything I don't think. Yeah, there is. I just wanted to double check. I think the only thing that we would have that would ever get an inquiry onto your credit report is if we had to build your credit profile a little bit. And with that being said, if there was something like that, that we had to apply to get you an additional card to build your profile, then we would then also remove that credit inquiry as well.
Okay, so that doesn't present any big, you don't present any bigger problems by doing what you're doing then?
No.
Okay, and these other data furnishing companies, as you call them, which are really sub-entities that contract with Experian or TransUnion, whatever, and
yep.
become other credit reporting agencies that many other people, such as landlords, would contract with if they don't contract with one of the big three for credit reports. How fast does this happen in the world of computers today? Because years ago, when I was in business and had a contract with one of the big three, we found it took time where there were sub-agencies involved before the information ever filtered down there. And if you got some information from that sub-agency, it was often much different than it was from one of the big three. So in today's world, with, you know, minute-by-minute transactions or second-by-second transactions, are you, by fixing these things with the big three, almost immediately fixing it with every other sub-agency, or not necessarily?
So depending on, again, every individual or every person has their own individual situation. If I pull 100 reports, every one of them are going to be different. So it's going to be tailored to every individual. And so depending on what needs to be done, we have the ability of freezing probably 5 or 6 of the major data furnishing companies, people like a NexisLexis, Innovis, ARS. These are the big data furnishing companies, and a company like a LexisNexis has all of your information from probably the day you were born. Every address you've ever had, every phone number you've ever had, every credit card you've ever had, everything you've probably ever applied for. And so, you know, that's a reach of your privacy right there. And so, you know, that's something I suggest to everybody, is to always freeze any of those big data furnishing type companies. You know, there's other services out there, companies like Delete Me. They will remove all of your private information. They will do an internet scrub of basically all the data furnishing companies that are out there. As far as all the bureaus, we put the bureaus on notice, and we also have the ability to attack the actual creditor and tell them they are out of compliance and they also need to be removing it as well. So we don't necessarily attack the three bureaus, but we'll also go after the original creditors as well.
So on older information, where, let's just use for an example, many banks have been taken older over the years, and, you know, a certain bank that one might have dealt with or that put something negative on their credit report no longer exists. Do you have any trouble tracking down the present owner, whoever bought that, or if it's in complete demise? Do you have any trouble tracking that down and getting those reports corrected when it comes to dealing with the actual creditor, and you may not be able to just get it removed some other way?
It's even easier when they're not the original creditor. It's illegal what they're doing. So a data furnisher who purchased your debt to reapply it to those bureaus to show that you're negative or you're in default, that's actually illegal for those data furnishing companies to do. So I would send out a letter and they would have to remove it by law.
Okay. And do you keep a list when you talk about NexisLexis and ARS being, you know, sort of like sub-entities, if you would? I don't know if that's the correct terminology, but of the big three credit reporting agencies, but basically doing the same thing with information about you. Do you keep a list of the major ones that you have to contact in order to get this accomplished in case it does not filter down from the big three?
Yeah, typically with the bigger cases that we take on, we're going to go in and freeze probably the top, you know, the top 10 big data furnishing companies, because nine times out of 10, when the banks go in and do their searches or the bureaus do their searches, they're only going to reach out to about, you know, the top two or three bureaus. They're going to reach out to LexisNexis, you know, ARS, Innovis, CoreLogic, companies like that. That's where 90% of all the information they need is right there. So they don't tip, they're not going to mess with, you know, the other 3,000 data furnishing companies out there. For someone maybe who has a horrific profile that's got five or six charge-offs, they went through a divorce, their mortgages went into foreclosure, and, you know, we have to do a big clean sweep, that's where we would go in and be able to get things cleaned up in 30 days.
So there isn't much chance that in this process that you would miss one of these companies, so that if someone decided to look beyond, you know, those big, the big three and the big 10 or whatever, there's not much chance that they're going to get negative information even off any other sub-entity that they might look at. And I'm concluding from what you're saying, if they did, you could get that corrected in a heartbeat also. Is that a correct conclusion on my part?
Yeah, there isn't anything that we wouldn't be able to get fixed and or removed on the credit report.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it for my questions tonight. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Sure. And something else, too, just occurred to me. there's if you're arguing with the IRS about this tax that they claim that you owe, how is it that John is able to successfully, each and every time and without exception, be able to get the IRS to either, at the less amount, either just stop their collection efforts, period, and never contact you again, or in the best scenario, give you a letter that says, we agree with you that you're someone who's not required to file a 1040. So,
should I answer that?
Yeah. You know, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the answer is John knows what he's doing, obviously.
Right. But the thing is that he's following the law. I mean, can't we also come in and say, gosh, everybody knows that, you know, except for death and taxes, we have taxes. We got to pay them. You should pay your fair share, Kent. But
so the
reality go ahead.
So the nice thing about the actual Federal Register is that if you look at the Federal Register in Title 26, there is no enforceable law in Title 26. And Title 26 is the IRS Internal Revenue Code. Right. Title 27 is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And that's where they get some of their jurisdiction, but they're not even in the same. How could you enforce something in Title 27 to Title 26? And so it won't be able to hold up in court. And again, there is no law stating you are forced to do your taxes.
Right. All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. We'll welcome you back Saturday with Justice Beshear on how to place yourself in a position where you own nothing but control everything. Remind you also, tomorrow night, Thursday night, there is a recording. And that recording, if I remember, is Glenn Roberts. And he is sharing with you his technique and position with home foreclosure remedies. It's a recording, so if you've heard it once or twice or three times, that's good. If you haven't, you need to. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.